What's up, everybody? This is Alex Kelly back here with another episode of the Furloughed Film Talks podcast with my brother Ryan.
What's up, everybody?
We're in a foreign land right now.
It's not my foreign. It's not foreign to me.
It's not. It's been only foreign, less foreign for a couple weeks for you.
A few weeks, yeah. Yes. My new digs, Ryan, my sweet new digs.
We have the pupusa, the original pupusa,
here with us as the asshole pupusa.
Yes, who chewed up my wallet and now I am not too pleased with. But we're back here with another episode. Say hello to Marina.
Hello, Marina. Hey, and she's gone. Yeah,
we have mortified her. But thank you guys for checking out this episode. We're going to be talking about Moon Knight, the new Disney Plus show.
And
the Oscar.
Will Smith.
Yeah. And maybe a little South by Southwest talk.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to throw some interviews in here?
Yeah, I'll throw in a Frank Marshall interview.
Ooh, that's fun.
Director of Jazz Fest.
Husband, too.
Kathleen Kennedy. Lots of spouses.
Is she going to reclaim herself with Obi-Wan?
Probably.
Maybe.
I think she reclaimed herself with Mandalorian. Are we just going to give all the credit for that to Jon Favreau?
I'm just going to give all the credit to that for... Jon Favreau.
Filoni and Favreau.
Yeah, it's mostly...
Anyways, thank you guys for checking out this episode. As always, go check out the Twitter at Furloughed Film, Instagram at Furloughed Film Talks. Oh, and this episode, real fast, we have a code word for the giveaway that we're doing today, Ryan.
What giveaway is that?
Is Yellowstone Season 4 Blu-ray that I've had for about 2 weeks now and need a giveaway.
So you can expect to receive Yellowstone in July.
In 1 to 2 months. Shipping pending.
And U.S. only, guys.
Yes, this time, yeah. Ryan, what should the code word be?
What was it last time?
It had just some dudes, Saint.
Saint?
Because it was Saint Maud.
How about we make it, Yoshi's an asshole?
Yoshi's an asshole, okay.
That would be difficult.
I think the marketing company would love that we have made the code word for their giveaway, Yoshi's an asshole.
You know what we should make it?
What's that?
Bull Durham.
I like that.
Okay, it's going to be Bull Durham. B-U-L-L-D-U-A... B-U-L-L-D-U-R-H-A-M.
There you go. And if you can tell us why there is a connection between Bull Durham and Yellowstone...
You get a DVD.
I will personally do things.
Send you a DVD.
Yes. Yeah. So, Ryan, should we start off with the Oscars first?
Yeah.
Sure?
Okay.
Cool. CODA won. And... Jessica Chastain won.
Yep, and Troy Kotsur won.
And Ariana DeBois won.
Yeah, and...
Encanto won.
Yes, yeah. And...
And Dune picked up a lot of smaller awards.
I feel like you're leaving something out here.
I am. I can never assume or know what you mean, Ryan. What would you be talking about?
Mr. Will Smith won. Or did he lose?
No, he won. And lost.
Yeah.
After he assaulted...
Definitely was an assault.
Another
yeah.
man on stage. He slapped the shit.
Okay, how are we going to structure this? What all do we want to talk about the Oscars? Do you want to talk about how much of a shit show it was? How awful the hosts were? The slap hurled around Hollywood?
I feel like I want to talk about like how bad the hosts were, but like this is how bad... This is my review of it. I don't remember anything that they did.
Right,
They were so bad, they were not memorable.
I think the two things that really stood out for me were memorable were just, who's the white lady? White comedian?
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer cosplaying as Spider-Ham.
That dude. Oh my
and
God.
And then I think also Amy Schumer, like, after Chris Rock had disrespected Jada Pinkett Smith.
Who's Will Smith's wife.
Yeah, like, wrongly or rightly, if you think that's disrespectful, maybe not. But then, like... went up to Kirsten Dunst and made, like, a obviously, like, pre-written joke about how she was just, like, a stand-in. They throw in the seats.
A seat filler.
Yeah. So, it was bad. It was really...
And it wasn't like it was, 30 to 40 minutes after the Chris Rock thing happened. It was, like, 10 to 15 minutes after. And she made it...
No, I think it was a good while.
But then she, like, made a joke about it.
They definitely had plenty of time to be, like, this isn't... a joke that we should be doing at the moment.
And she literally was like, wow, did something happen? Did I miss something? Blah, blah, blah. And it was like, yeah, you dummy. Like,
yeah, whoever's the writer, whoever's producing and writing for this thing should be, like, fired on the spot.
Yeah.
Like, It's so, so bad.
And it's really funny. Like, I keep seeing people be like, oh, they cut 8 categories, basically, and yet it was still 28, 30 minutes longer than last year.
Was it really?
Yeah, last year was 3 hours and 19 minutes. This year it was 3 hours and 47 minutes.
But last year they didn't have any performances. They didn't have any musical performances.
No, yeah, you're right there.
And so that was at least, like, 2 or 3.
And they didn't have any of the bullshit, like, the Spider-Ham and,
crowd work bullshit.
God, what was Regina Hall was dressed up as, Tammy Faye, and Wanda Sykes was dressed up as
Richard
from King Richard.
Richard Williams.
Yeah. Which I was like, that's the least problematic moment for Will Smith that night.
I don't know. And then Will Smith got up and slapped Chris Rock in the face because Chris Rock made a joke about Jada Pinkett Smith's hair.
Yeah.
By far the lamest of jokes anyone in the world could make about Jada Pinkett Smith and or her family.
Yeah, it was... the funny part is they both... And I guess I completely fucking forgot this. They did a movie together. They did multiple movies together.
Anyways, so who was in movies together?
Jada Pinkett Smith and Chris Rock both starred in Madagascar and however many Madagascar
songs. Oh, but they never crossed paths in that shit. There's no way they would have. They all recorded that like on their own.
But they're on the press tours and everything together. And,
were they?
Yeah, when they're like on premieres and shit like that. So like, well, anyway, they had to have been together because there was multiple of them and they were super successful.
Yeah, and he like made similar jokes back in I think 2015 when he hosted.
Yeah, so 2016.
He like really went into Jada Pinkett Smith then. Maybe he's just jealous. I don't know. But anyways.
So yeah, he made this joke, slapped the shit out of him. Well, let's slap the shit out of him.
If there's no way none of our listeners haven't seen this, but
all my students keep talking about it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, by some act of God, you're living under a rock in Afghanistan. Like,
that was wildly specific.
I don't know. So Chris Rock made the joke. Will Smith like laughed it off. Was laughing about it, chuckling about it, and Jada Pinkett Smith was like pissed. And like mere like milliseconds later, Will Smith realizes Jada Pinkett Smith is pissed and walks up on stage, walks right up to Chris Rock and literally just bitch slaps him in the face.
Yep. And then goes back to his seat and the audio gets cut.
In America.
Yeah.
But in Australia and Japan, you can hear Will Smith yelling repeatedly, "Keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth."
Mm-hmm. Which, like, he says it twice, and the second time, like, it made up, because the first time, everybody was like, ah!
Everyone still thought it was a bit at that point, yeah, right?
Yeah, and then, like, he said it again, and, like, really pronunciated, like, fucking, and everybody in the room was like, ooh,
all
sensibilities!
All 5,000 guests of the Academy Awards, like, all hushed, collectively, at that point.
It was just, like, super, and then the audio cut back in for Americans, and it was, like, obvious that it was quiet as all get out, basically.
Yeah.
Awkward as shit.
Yeah. And then Chris Rock has to like continue with the whatever award they were giving out, the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And he literally goes like, "Oh my god, I so could."
Yeah.
And stops himself because there's like verified facts that Jada Pinkett Smith will fuck anything that moves, and like
cheated on him before.
Cuck Will Smith into oblivion. So like. Well, like, Chris
Do you think
Rock...
he would have gone back up there and beat the shit out of him?
I kind of
wish he had said something
Wish he really had gone in, because, like, by that point, security would have been, like, on red alert to, like, prevent anything from happening. So if, like, if Will Smith had, like, even gotten out of his seat after Chris Rock laid into his wife for fucking other dudes... Like, security would have tackled his ass on the stage and dragged him out.
Feed so fucking fast and gone to, like, commercial. Like,
yeah.
That would have been insane. Like, even more insane than, like, what actually transpired.
Right.
Which, like, top one live moment ever at award show.
Oh, for sure.
Like, by far the most insane fucking crazy moment ever.
So, anyways, the aftermath. Apparently... they tried to get him out of the theater, but he refused to leave.
Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. And then, also, like, they're seriously considering revoking his Academy Award membership, which would take away his award, obviously.
Do you actually think that'll happen?
They're going to do something.
I think they'll
either
suspend him.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll revoke his membership, but
they should. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if they revoke it, could they give it back to him? I definitely don't think he deserves to get the award for this year. Like, regardless, I'm not even talking about merits of the movie. I'm talking you can't slap someone at the award show and then be given an award. Any qualification should be null and void after you slap a host in the face.
Yeah.
Let's
be clear, not host, presenter.
Presenter. After you slap a presenter in the face, you definitely should be not allowed to win the award.
Yeah, I don't
I don't know what they should have done. They probably should have
should not have let him up there. I said this while we were watching.
Definitely should not have. At the bare minimum, they should have removed him from the theater and not allowed him to have a platform to give a speech.
Yep.
I think they probably should have, if they knew he was gonna win, just cut that category altogether and then redo the vote at a later time and then just announce the winner somehow.
Yeah, or do think you can do that. I think he deserved the award. That's not controversial necessarily before the slap.
I don't know. I think
so.
We aren't even talking about the slap, but I think. Probably him and Benedict Cumberbatch were equally deserving, but
I think 100% it is wild that they let him up on that stage.
Yeah,
it should not have been an option for him to go up and give an award and then basically apologize to everybody except for the person that he just physically assaulted on the stage.
Right,
that to me, as we were watching, it was just what the actual fuck are we watching? I don't get how that was allowed. I think he should be suspended. I don't think he should not be allowed at the Oscars next year, because the best actor winner from the previous year is supposed to announce the best actor or actress the next year.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So, he's supposed to go present next year, and I do not think...
Why didn't they do that? Did they do that this year?
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins announced best actress.
Oh, okay.
And then, best supporting actress announced best supporting actor.
Who announced best actor?
That would have been the team of people from, goddamn, why am I freaking...
Oh, it was...
Travolta, Uma Thurman, and Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, from Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, that's right.
Why the fuck did they... Well, anyways.
Because it was the 28th, 30th anniversary of the movie.
I guess if they had done it correctly, What's-Her-Face would have done it.
It should have been...
Frances McDormand.
Yeah, which I guess she must have been filming something or just couldn't have been there.
She just didn't want to be there.
Yeah. He's supposed to be there next year. I don't think you can allow that.
Yeah, that definitely should not happen.
Even though they probably will, because do you think everybody will watch it for that moment?
I don't think anyone's... No. I don't think anyone's going to waste their time with this shit.
Dude,
you're not watching it already, you're not going to, start watching it just because Will Smith slaps someone.
I don't think people will watch the full 3 hours out telecast, but I think people will absolutely tune in for that moment where he goes up to present, and then the clip of him presenting, with whatever he says up there, will absolutely go viral, and we will be talked about a shitload.
Yeah.
And ABC and the Academy knows that.
Yeah.
So, they'll be oh, hell yeah, we can't give up that.
My absolute favorite part of how this show is a complete shit show was not only, the slap happened, and then Will Smith won the award, they let him back on the stage to present it, he somehow spits on the stage, so they had to cut the feed. Then they instead of cutting the feed, they cut back to the hostage area where Serena and Venus Williams were sitting. And in that room, they had to cut the feed because Venus had a nip slip on live camera.
This was just
camera.
A freaking shit show.
It was an absolute shit show of a award ceremony. So, yeah.
Gotta love it, man. Gotta
and yeah, enough about that shit show, but okay. We're super stoked that Coda won Best Picture. That's amazing.
Yes.
That's We're super awesome. Stoked that Troy Kotsur won for Best Supporting Actor. Mm-hmm. That's super great.
That's amazing.
Super stoked that Denis Villeneuve got a bunch of awards for his film, because that shit was perfection. Oh, amazing movie.
Super happy Don't Look Up and Licorice Pizza didn't get jack shit.
Yeah. All the shit that we incessantly said shouldn't have been nominated, didn't even get in sniffing distance of winning an award. So that's good. All in all, I think what we said after the award show was we're very happy with how the actual awards went down, and some of the acceptance speeches were really good. everything, like, and that's, you know, 15% of the entire ceremony.
Yeah.
The rest of it was just dog shit running over by a nuclear fucking truck or something. Like, I don't
know. By Stephen Grant himself.
Yeah, just abysmal. Yeah,
I don't get it. I the thing that pisses me off the most, and this is definitely just, like, trumpeted for motherfucking me in the ass.
Happy anniversary, Ruxton. Should we shout that out on the...
Happy anniversary, Ruxton.
E-lily.
And, yes. They're going to listen to this.
They definitely will have zero idea that this happened.
Well,
she a renaissance? Like,
no, they've gotten to this place where they, like, most of the Oscars now is, like, shitting on the movies that are being presented or, like, awarded. And it's just like, no, like, don't do that. Like, some of the jokes are pretty funny. Like, some of the jokes can be good. But, like, when you're handing I don't remember what they handed to freaking Judi Dench. But, like, that pissed me off. It was like, why? Don't disrespect Dame Judi Dench, please.
Oh, they were handing out, like, burnt copies of movies or something?
Yes.
That was the weirdest skit I've seen in a while.
Yeah, and it was like, here's a copy of The Last Duel. Like, nobody's seen it, so...
Yeah, that's not cool, man.
Yeah, it was just... It was not great, but I thought it was the most exciting Oscars ever for, like, two moments, basically.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, we really peaked with whichever Oscars Call Me By Your Name was in.
Oh my god. Well, and then... It's been a shit show for a while. A couple years ago, they fucked up the, like...
Moonlight.
La La Land thing.
The ceremony where Parasite won wasn't, like, a disaster. It wasn't good, but it wasn't a disaster.
Last year was pretty good.
Last year was okay, and then... It's just weird how they had it set up. Yeah, and then they fucked up Moonlight. That was a while ago, though.
That was, like, 2016, 2017. Yeah. So, I mean, it's been 5-ish years. But within 5 years, they've had two fucking ridiculous, you know, incidents that have basically made the news everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's, I guess, what the freaking Academy wants the most. They just want people talking about what has happened. So, yeah. I don't know, man. I just think we're at a weird time with all of our movie stuff these days, so... We'll see what happens next year with the Oscars. But, Ryan.
Onward and upwards is something much more exciting.
Oh, hell yeah. We finally have Moon Knight. Yeah. Starring. What were you about to say?
Oscar Isaac.
And.
Ethan Klein. No, I know. Ethan Hawke.
There we go. Dear Lord. From Good Lord Bird.
Yep.
We have these two masterful actors and the newest Disney Plus Marvel Cinematic Universe show. Starring, I already said that. Directed, his first episode was from Mohamed Diab. Like, he's directing all 6 episodes.
And he's actually Egyptian.
Yes, which is fucking sick.
This is very, very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, real fast. Was this the most, like... Was this the best first episode of a Disney Plus Marvel show so far?
By far. This is the best first episode. This is the best... I would have to go back and look, but, like, it's one of the best that they've done for the TV shows on Disney Plus. By far.
Yeah.
It's top 5 for sure.
Bro, this is, like... I'm pretty sure this is going to be by far the best... show so far.
Yeah, like, they've screened the first 4 for some press, mm-hmm. and people have said it's, like, fucking amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's Oscar Isaac. You literally got, like, has he won an Academy Award?
I don't think so.
I think Ethan Hawke might have. They've all been nominated, but, like...
Yeah, hold on, let me... Oscar Isaac. Oscar. Boop, boop, boop. Ryan should keep on talking about... What is this movie about?
This is what we wanted Marina for.
Yeah, but she's out getting food.
She's out doing the law.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she's reading. Okay, so this is like... This is pretty interesting. It starts off following Stephen... Is it Stephen Grant?
Grant.
Stephen Grant, who is a... cashier at a gift shop in a Egyptian museum in London. I guess it's a British museum featuring Egyptian artifacts that they colonized and stole from the land.
Oh, wow.
And the people. Anyways, he's a gift shop person, And we are introduced to Mr. Stephen Grant as he wakes up in bed and his leg is
chained to his bed.
Chained to the bed, and there's multiple locks on the door. There's sand around the bed, so he knows if he left the bed. There's tape on the door, so he knows if he opened the door. And I mean, it's not really clear why this is happening from the get-go. But it is very clear that, you know, he's very tired. He clearly is suffering from insomnia of some sort. Because he's falling asleep on the bus, going to work, he's always late. And then the entire show is just a very trippy, like, in and out of, are we in a dream, are we not in a dream? What's real, what's not real? Oh, and I guess, like, we absolutely, from the get-go, start with the villain, who...
Oh, God, yeah, this is the craziest way to open the show before.
Yes, the villain's name is Arthur.
Yes, played, Arthur Harrow.
Played by Ethan Hawke. And literally, this show opens by Ethan Hawke, or by Arthur, taking a glass cup, he takes a drink, he flips it over, covers it in a towel, smashes it with his cane.
Smack it with a hammer.
Yes, smack it with a hammer. Is it dead?
Is it dead?
Takes the glass shards, pours them into his little sandals, puts the sandals on, and he just walks around normally with glass in his fucking sandals.
Yeah, which was like, what? What?
Yeah. Okay. It gave me really strong Da Vinci Code vibes. Did you?
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Because Vision's character self-flatulates himself. Paul Bettany's character is the monk. He self-flatulates himself.
Self what now?
Self-flatulates.
Is that the right word?
I think so.
That sounds like flatulence, but
I'm almost 100% positive.
Ryan's gonna look this up while I continue on with this. But yeah, most of the show is basically. Or the first episode is of him trying to figure out why he...
Self-flagellation.
Flagellate, okay.
Factually, yeah.
He, like, wakes up in the middle of the Alps and doesn't know how he got there. And then all of a sudden, people start shooting at him. And they have the aim of stormtroopers.
Very, very, very bad aim. Like, yeah. To the point where, like, the people shooting at him had the perfect position. They're on a second-story window overlooking him. He is directly below them, and they have two dudes with assault rifles are shooting at him, and somehow both miss.
Yes, and he, like, starts running away.
Yeah. It was impressively bad.
Yeah. But...
They must have glass in their shoes.
They probably do. It's just a prerequisite to get a... what is that called?
Tattoo?
Yeah.
With the scales?
Yes, the scales.
Yeah.
The scales tattooed on your arm. Because all of his little followers have it, and they're all like,
I think I might get that.
Do it. That means you're part of the bad guy crew. And then I'm going to come in with my Moon Knight
tattoo. Hey, we're an episode in. They might be the good guys. We don't know yet, Alex.
We'll see, Ryan.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see what happens. That's true with these shows. We always have,
there always could be a twist.
Yeah. No, the twist is he's fucking insane. So.
Clearly.
Moon Knight is a comic book from Marvel, where in the comics he had three different personalities that he would like change interchange as he was like fighting crime in the 1970s. But as the comics have kind of shifted, it's become where he has this dissociative identity disorder where he has three different identities, and they have really kind of dove deep into this show.
It's not even like really has multiple personalities. It's actually like there's separate entities that like inhabit his body.
Yeah,
like multiple personalities kind of seems like, you know, you're the same person switching between different like versions.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like it's completely different, like people inhabiting the same
body.
Yeah.
Which I'm gonna be very interested to see how they, because now let's not spoil the end, but the ending of this episode is fucking sick.
Oh, we're doing no spoilers?
Yeah, let's keep it calm. But I think, like, I'm going to be very interested from this episode on, how they're going to handle them switching the personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the episode, it's abundantly clear that he gave over to Mark Spector, which is, like, the main personality.
The mercenary guy.
Moon Knight guy. And so I'm going to be very interested to see how they handle cutting between.
Yeah, this one thing, like, I really wasn't disappointed by this, but I, like, was really hoping they would, like, flashback or something. But they kept in the little fight with Arthur's, like, henchman, where they're shooting at him and there's a car chase. Stephen Grant kept, like, kind of, like, you know, spazzing out, and obviously Mark Spector was taking control, like, beating the shit out of these guys. But they never actually showed Mark Spector fighting them. They just, like, skipped to the point where, like, Stephen Grant's back, and these guys are, like, falling out of the truck with their brains blown out.
Yeah, I would think that maybe in this next episode they cut back and, like, show what happened, or, like...
Maybe, but I'm sure... It'd be interesting to see where they pick up in episode two, but I really hope... Like, they obviously have to kind of show Mark Spector's,
yeah,
like, fully taking over and being, like, the main
dude
kind of at some point.
What was your favorite part of this episode?
Favorite part of this episode? Okay, so... well, we can't talk about it because it's the end.
Spoiler alert.
Okay, spoiler alert. 3, 2, 1.
Go.
Okay. So when he was getting chased by the Egyptian doggy demon, and he, like, makes it into the bathroom. And,
a jackal, but whatever.
Yeah, and Mark Spector is in the mirror saying, like, let me save us. Like, I need to take control. Let me do this, man.
Let me have it, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, he's freaked. Okay, when Mark Spector started, like, getting into him, and then, like, the camera zooms into the mirror and just has, like, a full frame of Mark Spector, and he's just like, let me save us. And that's, like, the last thing he says before Stephen Grant's like, fuck, okay.
Ah.
And then, like, you can tell, like, it's gonna happen, and then hieroglyphs start, like, appearing on the fucking wall, and finally, like, his head rolls back, and it's like, the full bathroom behind him is just, like, Egyptian hieroglyphs.
And, like, the wraps start going, like,
yeah,
over his shoulders.
And the Moon Knight, like, costume starts, like, rattling onto his body. And then the fights. They did that so cleverly, too, where, like, they obviously didn't want to blow their budget on episode one, like, with a fight.
Yeah.
And so they cut out, and they show, like, shit flying out of the bathroom. And then, like, the jackal tries to escape the bathroom.
It's like, shit!
And, yeah, they clawed back in. And, like, then they just show what we see in the trailer where Moon Knight's just beating the fucking shit out of him.
And he turns around and he just, like, walks out. Which, like, there were a couple moments in this episode where, like, they had been in the trailer. So it was like, oh, okay, like, I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
That reveal, even though you'd already seen it, was not spoiled or, like, ruined at all. Like, it was still such a culmination of,
yeah,
like, the entire episode that it was, like, fuck, yeah.
Because the overall, like, minute to minute and a half scene from, like, him fighting it to him accepting it, or him fighting it, Mark Spector, like, doing the, like, the really impassioned, like, I gotta do this, man, and then to him accepting it, and then the full transition, like, that whole thing is just,
yeah,
like, gaping, wide open mouth, like, chills on your back,
yeah,
watching this shit. So epic.
I had one person text me because they watched it earlier today. The only problem that they had with this episode was they thought some of the CG looked kind of cheap, which, like, the chase scene, kind of, I could see.
A little. At the very end where, like, he stops the van and, like, the cupcake rolls off the top of the van.
Yeah.
That was, like, and then the logs come down the mountain.
Yeah.
That was some pretty, like, Lord of the Rings tier CGI.
Yeah, I was not really pleased with that, but, like,
but I mean,
that's such a nitpick of, like, this entire episode.
Yeah, for a fucking Marvel TV show, like,
yeah,
really?
No,
I mean, it's obviously, okay, if we're really arguing about CGI, like, this is obviously 10 times better than anything CW's ever put out.
Oh, 100%. But, like, and that's my biggest problem with, like, that problem with the problem is saying that and, like, focusing in on that is, like, okay, I'm cool with, like, a couple logs looking like shit.
Yeah.
As long as, like, when they show Khonshu, who is, like, the moon god that technically is, like, taking over Mark's body,
mm-hmm,
is really well done.
And, oh, yeah. Like,
he is so well done.
And they, not only really well done, they showed him in broad daylight.
Yeah. Like, they did not shroud it as much as they probably could have.
No,
and
not
they,
at
yeah,
all.
They just had it, like, straight up. And then they had, there's such a, like, horror, scary movie aspect to this where, like, he's just on the bus and he sees Khonshu just standing there, and then, like, they go past the pole
and he disappears.
Yeah, Khonshu disappears and it's like, oh, shit.
Plus the end credit, I don't know, imagery, or, like, what do you call it? The end credit,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, I don't know what I'm saying. The end credits were, like, James Bond opening credit level,
yeah,
like, badassery.
No,
yeah.
I'm so fucking happy.
You know, like, like the James Bond opening credits cost like anywhere from $10 to $30 million to do.
What the fuck?
Yeah, like a huge part of the budget is just doing the opening credits.
That's insane.
So it's all like really artsy CGI.
Good lord. What did you think of Ethan Hawke's character? Because we get, he was in it a little bit more than I was expecting.
Yeah, I don't think we got enough to really say much about him. Like, we definitely got zero background on him.
Other than glass in the shoes.
Yeah, which is nothing.
Yeah.
I thought it was portrayed really, really well. Like, Ethan Hawke's obviously going to do an amazing job. I thought he was, like, just the right amount of, like, crazy, but, like, he has a clear justification for, like, the action he's taking, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's obviously crazy, but I think in whatever universe this is and whatever, like, world they've built here, mm-hmm. like, if Steve Spector can turn into Moon Knight, that is not...
Steve Grant.
I'm sorry, if Mark Spector can turn into Moon Knight, it's not so crazy that, like, you know, there's an Egyptian god that these people, like, worship, right?
Worshipping, yeah.
Right, so if you take, like, that, if you take that context... It's not so crazy that there's, like, this kind of cult that follows this god and, like, dishes out this, like, divine judgment on everybody. So, like, in that, like, I really like how it's a really good balance of crazy but kind of, like, well-reasoned crazy cult behavior. I think it's going to be really interesting. I'm really looking forward to, like, actually seeing the background there and, like, and it'd be interesting to see if it's either an exposition dump from Arthur, or it's going to be like Stephen Grant or Mark Spector, like discovering it or revealing it, or how they go about doing that. But I'm really looking forward to like getting the like full picture of what the fuck is going on with that like culty
thing. I think that'll be like an exposition dump from Khonshu to Spector.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Like, I think it'll be Khonshu, like, explaining it, because the god that...
Because Khonshu's a god, right?
Yeah, he's an Egyptian god.
Because, like, Khonshu would be like, yeah, Ahmed, that fucking asshole, like, there's a reason we...
Yeah, we
like,
fucked him up.
Yeah.
We fucked her up, I guess. No, last thing, and I think this is something that people have had a problem with the other MCU shows, is they've been a little too... what's the right word or phrase? They've been too reliant on the MCU as a whole and kind of throwing in, like... Oh, we are connected to the MCU to kind of justify why they're a show.
Yeah.
There's none of that in this fucking
Zero.
Episode.
If you watch this without knowing that Moon Knight was a Marvel property, you have no idea that this is a Marvel TV show.
No, which is great.
This 100% could be like either like not even a comic book or, you know, something that like could go up against like American Horror Story or something like along that kind of genre. So like, which is, I think, good.
No, I think it's great.
Right?
I think it works in its favor because I think they need to
they
set
definitely,
this character up as itself.
And they definitely need to be able to create content on Disney Plus without, like, completely relying on their, like, film success, right?
Yeah.
They need to be able to do standalone TV shows without, like, just making a like vignette about one of the characters from the Avengers or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, no, I think the way that they're going to be able to do that is going to help it a lot, and I think it's going to help the character of Moon Knight because I think the character is so layered and different that like you can't be like, oh hey, like this is a guy who could have run into Captain America. It's like, no, like let's set up what this is first and explain what the fuck this guy does, and then we'll get to like the rest of the MCU with this guy at some point.
Yeah.
Like, we need to have
fuck,
this...
Fuck, I'd be cool if he was never in the MCU and they just did, like, endless Moon Knight TV shows.
No, I think... I don't know if that's a possibility, but, like, they want to do... I think they want to do a Midnight Suns thing, which is, like, Ghost Rider, Doctor Strange, and Moon Knight all together. It's, like, a team... And the Punisher. They're all on a team together called Midnight Suns.
Okay, if they... I don't really want to see the Ghost Rider again. I fucking hate that character. But I'd be okay with that group coming together only if, what's his face, plays Punisher?
John Bernthal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his show's on Disney Plus now, so, and we've already seen...
Dude, could you
fucking imagine Jon Bernthal like in an MCU movie?
What, Jon Bernthal and Oscar Isaac together?
Just fucking.
That'd be insane.
Clean pants, please.
Yes, that would be the wildest shit ever. I think they'll do it, and I think Jon Bernthal is going to come back as the Punisher because they already had Charlie Cox back as Daredevil.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to like.
They have so many directions to go with, like in the next like 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun to watch.
CCC.
We're going to watch Moon Knight together every week, Ryan?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, well, fine.
I'll come to you next week and we'll just trade off, okay?
Okay, that works for me.
That work?
Yes, it does. Okay. Me. But now it's time to finally premiere our interview with the one Frank Marshall who directed Jazz Fest, A New Orleans Story. It was at South by Southwest. It'll be coming out in select theaters in May. We'll get that information to you when we have it.
This is one I actually kind of want to see.
No, it's good. It's a really good one. I got to watch it before I interviewed him. I would definitely recommend it. We'll do a full review of it in the future. But here is Frank.
We are now joined by the director of the South by Southwest documentary that is going to be premiering Wednesday, March 16th. It's called Jazz Fest, A New Orleans Story. We're here with Frank Marshall. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good today, Alex. How about you?
I'm good. Just getting through South by Southwest. It's been a crazy couple days here in Austin.
Yeah.
Running around the streets and just trying to get to see as much as I possibly can, you know?
Yeah, that's what I love about that festival. There's so much going on. You can't see it all. It's a little bit like Jazz Fest.
Yeah, it's so much going on here. And with South by Southwest, you know, obviously these last 2 years have been really, really crazy. You know, what made South by Southwest the perfect, or one of the perfect places, one of the most perfect places to have, you know, Jazz Fest, your documentary, premiere here?
Well, I think that's it. It's the combination of things that happen in South by Southwest. You've got the music, but you've also got the movies, and you've got great food. And that's what they have at Jazz Fest. And plus the heritage and the culture compromises all of Jazz Fest. That goes on in Austin as well. And so it's one of my favorite festivals, and I'm really thrilled to have our movie premiering there. It's a world premiere, actually.
Yeah. I just got done watching it not too long ago. It's a heartfelt just kind of love letter to New Orleans. That's why I loved the fact that it's called A New Orleans Story, because it's really about New Orleans as a whole.
Exactly. The diversity of the whole festival, it's a little misleading when people think Jazz Fest, but it's got every kind of music, as you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's obviously we expanded it to have the culture and the history and to examine that as well back over the last 50 years. But I also want to thank Sony Classics for holding it until we can see it in the big screen, because it needs to be seen and heard in a movie theater. And so I'm again happy that it's going to be at the Paramount on Wednesday night,
which is a great theater. It's such an awesome place to have it at. With this coming out, you know, technically we're still in a pandemic, and everything that Jazz Fest had to go through with the pandemic, obviously you kind of had to rework portions of this movie. What's it been like making this during a pandemic and also now releasing it here at South by Southwest?
Well, it's been kind of a challenge because of the unknown. You know, you think in 2 weeks we're going to be able to get this interview or that interview, and you can't. I mean, luckily we shot it all in 2019, and then it was really in post-production that we got hit with all the restrictions. So it took a lot longer to finish, and you know, we kept having to change that last card that started by saying it's only been canceled once, then it was canceled twice, then is it going to happen? And when's the 51st edition of Jazz Fest going to be? But other than that, we've been able to overcome all the hurdles.
I'd be very interested to see what the reaction is to that final card with what you guys have it as, because I think y'all did that perfectly. What was kind of, I guess, what made you decide to do it that way?
Well, just the circumstances. Jazz Fest has persevered all these years and overcome all these different things. And that's sort of what I want the feel of the movie to be, that there's hope and that we can go on and come out of this And this is kind of the movie's kind of the antidote to what we've been going through for 2 years, and just come out and have a good time and enjoy yourself.
Yeah. When hope is, it's such a great word, and it makes me think about what music can do. It's so emotional. And there's one scene where Bruce Springsteen, he's singing after Katrina happened, and you have, you know, Quint Davis, who's choking up as he's, you know, recalling it. Why do you think music is able to do that? You've got two guitars behind you, so, and you've done multiple music documentaries. You know, why is music that impactful?
I think it touches the soul. Mm-hmm. You know, it reaches through to everybody. And it's that experience when Aaron Neville's singing there at the end, Amazing Grace, you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, there's 25,000 people silent there in a hot field, you know, and it, as you say, it brings everybody together and it gives them hope, and it, you know, it reaches very deep into everybody's soul.
Yeah. Well, not only does it give people hope, but it gives people energy. And there's one moment that I really, really liked, which was Sadeko, I think that I'm saying that right, where he's literally on his back and he's playing.
He's doing the washboard.
Yeah, and he's just going crazy. And then you've got the other guy coming in and like trying to be in frame. Do you think that's normally how they would have, you know, performed that song, or was that really kind of for the cameras?
No, I think they you know, they thrive off of each other, and okay. And that's Rockin' Doopsy, and he's leaning in with the accordion and he's trying to get that energy from the washboard guy, and so it's part of the performance. But he might have had his eye on the camera. You never know.
Yeah, well, there's definitely that one moment where Katy Perry like kind of says something to the camera. So they.
Oh yeah, she points at us. Yeah.
Yeah, she's. They're all pretty aware of where the cameras are, as most performers are.
Yeah.
So, Jess says you guys were able to record the 50th anniversary of it. What's your favorite kind of memory of Jazz Fest? Maybe not just necessarily what you guys got at the 50th, or any times that you've been at Jazz Fest before?
You know, it's just, for me, it's when everybody's there together and have to say a couple of the performances with the entire, looking at it, that sea of people, mm-hmm. and seeing them all enjoying things from all ages, you know, yeah. From there's kids to grandpas and grandmas, and everybody's having a great time because of the music. And it's special. And it's to see it happen in the gospel tent, to see it happen with Preservation Jazz, to see it happen with Jimmy Buffett, to see it happen with Pitbull. You know, you're seeing all these different audiences respond in the same way to music. And that's what's special about it for me. I can't pick one moment. You know, I'm sitting there with Sonny Landreth watching him play the slide guitar, and it's magic. You know, I go, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And it, again, as you say, it just draws you in and it's part of your soul. So I just loved every moment of being there.
Yeah. It's such a fun movie. I was sitting here watching it, like kind of dancing to the music in the chair. So it was just kind of, it's a fun, fun movie to watch. And the entire Jazz Fest, you know, it was started by George Wynn. How early on was he involved with this project?
Well, I actually, in 2018, the summer of 2018 is when I met Quint Davis. And we started talking about, because he, you know, he said, look, the 50th is coming up. I think we should document it. And we started talking about ways to do that. And I said, well, maybe we should just make a documentary. And that's when we then started talking about how to put it together. And of course, then we had to talk to all the bands. It was a major producing thing. But also then going back into the archives, one of the great things is it's like a treasure hunt where you look and you find little golden nuggets. And one of them was 16 millimeter footage of George Wynn in the first Jazz Fest in 1970. You know, he founded Newport Folk and Jazz Festivals. And then he came to New Orleans, and to see him with Mahalia Jackson, and then cut to him today and to ask him about those things and what he remembers and why it's important and why it's he said it's the greatest festival in the world, and I think he's right.
Yeah, no, he did such a great job, and in that kind of just parallel of him back then and him in 2019 was so cool to see. You know, what is, for people who go see this movie, what is the biggest takeaway, do you think, from this movie?
Enjoy life.
Yeah.
You know, it's and you know, there's all way kinds of ways to do it, but music is the key.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, Frank, thank you so much for the time. Jazz Fest will be premiering March 16th. Do you guys have a wide release yet for when this will be coming out?
No, we're still waiting to make sure that everybody can go to the movies. So yeah. I think it'll be May or June when we go a little wider, but Wednesday's our world premiere.
Perfect. Well, yeah, we'll be talking about it when it definitely wide releases. And again, thank you so much for the time, sir.
Okay, thanks.
And that was Frank Marshall.
Frank Marshall, guys. Thank you to Frank for hopping on and talking with me.
And I'm sorry, I wasn't there to be part of the interview.
We'll talk with him again in the future. It was a good 10-minute conversation. Got to learn a lot about the movies, which is always fun. But Ryan, this has been a fun episode. Thank you for hosting me in your new home.
Oh, always, you're always welcome here. Oh,
thank you.
Old mommy needs to come visit his sweet little pupusa.
Daddy.
Okay.
But everybody, thank you for checking out this episode of the Furloughed Film Talks podcast. We will be back next Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, with another episode with Moon Knight Episode 2, which will also be on Disney Plus. So check that out. Check out Disney, or I guess Episode 1 right now. But everybody, go check out the Instagram at Furloughed Film Talks, Twitter at Furloughed Film. Remember, if you want a free copy of the Yellowstone Season 4 Blu-ray, send in the code word BULLDURHAM, and you can get yourself a free copy. But everybody, have a great rest of your week, and we will see you next time.
Adios, amigos.